Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. For Alisa Goodkind and Lily Mandelbaum, it's all in the family. In 2009, this mother-daughter team acted on their dual passion to find and chronicle people who express themselves through their clothing. And to that end, Style Like You was born. In their words, this fashion anthropology project offers a platform to the man or woman who, quote, lives consciously inside his or her clothing. They believe this dynamic of unsung yet outstanding individuals has routinely been excluded from the celebrity-driven world of mainstream fashion. We're introduced to these people in very personal, no-holds-barred webisodes and photos. For fashion stylist editor Alisa, who in the 80s and 90s worked at top magazines like In Style, Glamour, Vanity Fair, and Lily, who was in college when Style Like You took off, anybody can be inspired by someone else, no matter how different they seem to be on the surface. The pair works to capture culture in the moment. And some of their profiles include Molly Guy, whose vintage wedding dress store is revolutionizing the wedding dress. Matchmaker Amy Duran, who believes you can find your soulmate by first finding yourself. Visual artist Erin Lefkowitz, who says her armor of jewelry keeps her safe. And Willie Moon, who shares his journey from Salvation Army to Vintage McQueen. Style Like You takes Alisa and Lily all over the place, and this labor of love keeps them so busy that I am really grateful they're able to join me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, ladies, really, honestly, what was the catalyst that sparked this project? Lily?
The project kind of began because, for many reasons, but on my mom's behalf, she was a stylist in the industry for, you know, over 20 years and saw it change a lot over the course of her career. You know, actually, she took a break to raise me and my brother when we were, like, super young in the 90s, and she came back in the early 2000s to a totally different industry where once she had found her tribe and was amongst all these really creative, awesome people and people who just express themselves so freely through their clothing and just were so open-minded. And she came back and it was kind of like this exclusive, pretentious tribe of socialites who were just, you know, interested in clothing as like a symbol of sort of like money and status and being cool and all of this other stuff that
exclusion.
It wasn't. Yeah.
But at least that's not new, or that wasn't new, was it?
No, that's new.
Really? Well, I, who am not a fashionista, I just assumed that no one was ever talking to me.
No. it used to, you know, the 80s and 70s were a time of where the, you know, fashion was more of an art and it was a haven for misfits. You know, all of the, you know, the misfits now have gigantic industry like Betsy Johnson and, and Marc Jacobs. And they were all my friends. And, you know, people that I hung out with now have these giant corporations, many of them. So, you know, there isn't that ability anymore for, very difficult for a misfit and for anyone to begin and to become something bottom up right now, because we're completely controlled by corporations and brands and marketing machines that suppress the wild voice of youth. And that wild voice of youth that I came out of, you know, dictated the culture. And we don't have that anymore. There is no wild voice of youth. Youth is marketed at, you know, their minds are controlled from the time they're born to eat certain things and listen to music, certain music, and, you know, to buy, to consume.
And to look a certain way.
Everyone is encouraged to be like a herd, like a crowd in the same thing, you know, because it makes these few people that are controlling the arts and in particular fashion, which is my concern, which has a big impact politically and culturally, enormous on the culture, is controlling people to want to be the same, to be afraid to be different. Whereas it used to be being different, you know, like true originality was valued.
Back then.
Originality was, you know, what you people, you know, it was coveted. When I was at Condé Nast as an assistant in my 20s, I was, I would be taken home by Alexander Lieberman, who was this gigantic figure in the culture. He was the creative director of Condé Nast, all of Condé Nast. He was a major artist And he would be interested in 22-year-old me, and he would take me home in his limousine, and he would do that with all of us and talk to us, and they would and want to know what I think and what's happening, and we would have these expense accounts every week, every Monday morning till Friday. Then we'd have to account for it to go out, to go to the clubs, to go downtown, to see, that was our job as editors. Everything has just become very formulaic. And conformity and luxury and this illusion of being rich and buying into that is, a celebrity rich, be someone other than yourself, is now the norm.
So that must have been really shocking for you to stay home, raise your two children, and then re-enter and feel that you've just landed on another planet.
Devastating. Total fish out of water. The same people in the front rows of all the fashion shows that I was going to as a freelance stylist at that time when I came back were all people that I knew from that time period. They were all now in big positions at magazines. No one says hello. No one talks to you. It's just, incredibly clicky, incredibly fearful, a completely different environment, not collaborative sharing and collaboration and the new ideas is what creates culture to be stimulating and vibrant and for truly original ideas to appear, not what I feel is now, which is commodified. It's commodified 70s, commodified 80s. We just redo the past instead of a new, something brand new.
So you're doing something brand new, you and Lily. So let's talk about that. Let's we'll go back and forth a little bit. So you're lamenting what's going on. Obviously, you're now more than a toddler, Lily. Mm-hmm. And the two of you not even join forces so much, but are kind of doing this back and forth with each other.
Well, I just want to add and Lily can then talk more about it. That was my side of it in starting this and, the drive. But for Lily, she was experiencing the results of that. And then you should talk about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
how old are you, Lily?
I'm 24.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest memory growing up in terms of fashion and style was like this. I would have this battle within myself because I've always been a curvier girl. I always wanted to. My whole focus growing up was just how can I be skinnier and look like. How can I be skinnier and look like the girls in the magazines that I was seeing? So that was like my obsession. And it basically ruled my life, like that mental pattern.
And you were clearly not the only one.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just how can I lose weight so I can fit into skinny jeans? Because that was the trend that I saw in magazines on Sienna Miller and Kate Moss. And that was my focus. And so that was pretty depressing. And simultaneously, though, my mom had and the people that she surrounded herself with and, her friends from that were makeup artists and yoga teachers, just random people in her life I thought were so cool. And I loved their style and I was so obsessed with them. And I was just kind of having this inner battle between myself. Like, I want to, have fun with this like they do. But I'm also like miserable because I'm trying to like look like somebody that I'm not and fit this mold that I was seeing in magazines. So I was kind of confused, and I didn't really know whether I wanted to like fashion or didn't want to like fashion.
But did you talk to your mother about this? I mean, this is sort of an interesting personal dynamic. Mm-hmm. I mean, here you are struggling with trying to look like Sienna Miller or Kate Moss.
I don't think – it wasn't like so formed in my head what was going on then. Like in retrospect, I can like – reflect on it and understand the dualities of like my confusion, but back then it was just.
And you also didn't.
I didn't even know what was going on.
And being able to relate to this is not something I necessarily shared with anybody.
Yeah.
It was my own personal struggle.
Yeah.
Why don't I look like them?
I mean, she knew that I wanted to like lose weight and like be healthier, and like that was. But I don't know if she knew the extent of like. Well, I don't know. I don't think it hadn't formed in our head what was going on with the marketing and everything. Like, it just wasn't fully formed until later. In retrospect, I can see it clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So she was always encouraging me to, like, she loved, like, when I, trying to find my style and stuff like that. But
and that was part
and I
of
think
starting-
you, she did start to get annoyed when I would be, like, so obsessed with certain people. I remember she'd be like, you don't want to be like that.
Mary-Kate and Ashley.
Yeah, she would try to encourage me. Or like there were a few girls in my school that I just thought were super cool and they were all skinny. I mean, she was like she would get a little annoyed when I would be like obsessing on other girls and not like just owning myself.
Which is the marketing machine.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it wasn't so clear.
If you're just joining us, my guests today are Elisa Goodkind and Lily Mandelbaum, founders and creators of Style Like You. So you kind of come together, the two of you, and you sit down and you say, we've got to fix this situation.
One more thing I just want to add is what would happen, I guess, Lily was struggling to find her individuality within this, you know, marketing massiveness, monstrosity, which is very difficult. And I would look at her closet and I would say, you shouldn't shut your closet door. It's so pretty and it says everything about you, so leave it open. So somewhere around that time, you know, I just thought it said so much about her. So it wasn't like we can't really pinpoint it to like an exact moment where we said we have to fix this. It was more like we had this sudden incredible drive and passion. And we, you know, to pick up a video camera, that was completely Lily's genius video. I of course would, you know, coming from the 70s, what would I know about video?
Exactly. And take a picture.
Yeah. And she's, and we took our family handy cam. And while I was in the middle of styling, you know, in the franticness of that, and she was in the middle of starting college, we just went to these people's houses that we loved and that, you know, made us, you know, and from the very first one, the very, very first one that we did, we remember distinctly, she starts to talk immediately, openly, about how much she loves how flat-chested she is. And the minute that she starts talking, pointing to that part of her body and just openly with the most, you know, incredible self-confidence and unfiltered, you know, is so honest about her 100 pairs of Nike sneakers and how she was the tomboy in high school, not the prom girl, and how, you know.
Is this a friend?
That was somebody that I used to, when I moved to LA for college. I went to USC for a couple of years and I had worked with her at a store and I just fell in love with her.
She was one of those really cool tomboy people.
Yeah. But yeah, so what happened?
We knew
we
were onto something.
When you just started, because it was so free flowing
and
natural.
The minute it happened, we were like, this girl has so much style. You just can't help but fall in love. But the honesty, you know, and the connection that she is, and the intimacy and the connection that we're having with her, and then the world can have with her, and be honest about their imperfections and to love themselves for these supposed imperfections, which, you know, the magazines will tell you are, you know, or advertising and marketing.
Get a push-up bra or like get a padded bra if you're flat-chested.
Or wear Spanx.
Right.
I struggled with being flat-chested all of my life. It was a huge insecurity and it was a real complex. From that moment on, I've loved being flat-chested. Throughout the bras, never went back. Like it's like my favorite part of my body. And that's how all of Style Like You's been. Mm-hmm. You know, we've now done about 1,000 people.
Wow.
And that's always how it is. We leave unbelievably inspired, empowered, just out of our minds, you know, and we've got everyone working for us feels the same way. And, you know, it's just we're out of our minds with inspiration. Whereas the rest, you know, you look at a magazine, you look at the cover, you look at the retouching, you look at the same 5 people over and over again. This is depressing. This isn't exciting and empowering. This is like, you know, be this thing that you can never be. It is impossible. Even the most perfect bodied person doesn't look like this person.
You know what struck me the other day? I was going through a magazine, and it's a magazine that doesn't cater to my age group. And as I was leafing through the pages, there was a fashion spread, and the model in several pages weighed about 14 pounds. And I was so stunned because I really don't read fashion magazines. I never felt that they talked to me back then or even today. And I thought, it's 2014. I thought we went past that, mm-hmm. that the 20-somethings were kind of liberated. Not true, huh?
Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Well, what the hell is that about?
Mm-mm. Marketing.
Oh, the 14-pound models or 14-year-olds?
14-pound.
And 14-year-olds.
Both.
Well, that too.
You know, the age plays into this too because we purposely, from the day one of Style Like You, each one we post is completely opposite from the other in age, socioeconomic, race, sexuality, geographic. As much as we can promote the diversity in one platform, that's a huge part of our message because 2014, exactly, 21st century, why are there magazines for that appeal to just these very narrow you know, places of commonality. I mean, where has the idea gone, you know, that you can't be inspired by someone who is the opposite of you? And where is this exclusion coming from? This exclusion is all marketing to make people dislike themselves so much and want to be this other thing, so they buy things from the advertisers that are keeping the magazines in business. Why can't a media platform have all these different kinds of people from A to Z? And why can't people understand the excitement and the joy and the absolute thrill of being inspired by someone who is so different than you? A 75-year-old woman who's wearing over-the-knee boots that we posted today, you know, and feels as sexy, and she is the sexiest person, in our opinion, on the planet. How is that not the most inspiring thing for a 20-year-old? To not fear age.
The irony is, it would be inspiring if more 20-year-olds saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, style like you.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
So you have this great idea. How do you execute it? How do you know what to do?
Well, we didn't know what we were doing.
Oh, that's a relief to hear, actually.
Oh, no.
You
know?
Oh, my God.
We have been on quite a journey of ups and downs in the last 5 years. But,
and you obviously had to bankroll this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
I had to quit my career and my husband, yeah.
Well, I mean, so we just honestly, so the beginning of it, the first few months, we were just like, I don't even know what we thought we were doing. We were so high from the interviews and so inspired personally and liberated personally from going to these random few people's houses that we already knew. They were our friends that we just decided to start interviewing.
So you started on safe ground.
Yeah, we started with friends.
Right.
And we were just like, hi, literally. That's the only like word I can use to describe it. But because, you know, as my mom was saying, like, she felt liberated being a flat chested girl. I started seeing curvier girls talk about how they wear high waisted skirts and they don't need to wear skinny jeans. You know, and I was like, really? What? High waisted skirts? Where do I find those? I don't know. Like, mm-hmm. We were both just totally liberated, and the creativity and they were all just such creative, amazing, open spirits. The fact that they were even willing to talk to us about like their bodies and their, you know, all this stuff was so inspiring to us. So we were using like my dad's handy cam video camera from when I was like a 3-year-old that mm-hmm. they used to film.
Turning it sideways.
Yeah, we didn't know anything. I mean, I wasn't like a video person. We didn't know anything. I taught myself Final Cut, and basically out of my dad's office, his law firm, we like camped out that whole summer in my dad's law firm, and I learned Final Cut, and I started editing these videos, and then we started getting recommendations from everybody that we interviewed.
Yeah, that's always someone knows someone who knows
someone.
That's
how the whole thing happened.
So that's how the beginning was, just a lot of like, oh, okay, you got to shoot this person, you got to go to this person. It's still that way, but you know, and then we started scouting, and we'd go to like cool art exhibits and flea markets and just anything that we thought would aggregate and like bring together interesting people, we would just start going. And so that's kind of how it all
started.
Now
we have about 8,000 or, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 people in our database.
That we want to shoot.
That you want to shoot.
Yeah.
We can't keep up with it.
And that's not even scratching the surface of, like, if we really, you know, I mean, that's just kind of barely blinking. You know, I mean, if you really like, you know, all over the world.
Yeah.
We're at a point now where we really could start or go almost, you know, any town or city. We have enough of a network where we can start anywhere and, you know, do amazing shoots. You know, we have too much content. Like, you know, our problem has always been the reverse. We're not tech savvy. We're not business people.
Right.
But we have this, you know, we're sitting on this volcanic eruption of an idea, and the content is absolutely endless. We can't keep up with it and can't edit quickly enough to get, you know, to get it out there or market it well enough so people will appreciate it. That's our biggest problem. From the beginning, the doors just flew open flew open on that side, because underneath, you know, all of this homogeneity and marketing and commercialism and marketing, underneath and suppressed and underneath all of this are all these fantastic human beings, you know, instead of, you know, the same 5 celebrities.
What does it mean to have style? And before you answer that question, I never thought of myself as necessarily having style. You know, mm-hmm. I buy what I buy. I put on what I put on. That I don't feel that I could be categorized one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's good.
Besides asking you what is style, does everybody have style?
I think everybody has style, personally. I think style is like kind of this intangible thing. It's like the way you move. It's what you love. It's what you're attracted to. It's not, it's personal, and everybody has something that's, even if they don't, even if they're buying into, like, I don't think everybody has necessarily good style.
Then that's obviously the rub. I mean, you might have style, but it's
like highlighting on our platform everybody, because I do think everybody has style, but I think we're highlighting people that are conscious of what style is and conscious of their own
expressing
style,
their individuality,
and tapped into what their style is, because I think that's what makes it inspiring. Because a lot of people unconsciously have bad style because they're not I don't think they realize how much they're buying into things outside of themselves.
Exactly.
You're listening to The 51%, Conversations with Creative Women. My guests today, Alisa Goodkind and Lily Mandelbaum, the mother-daughter team behind Style Like You. You know, none of your webisodes mm-hmm. are dull. I mean, everybody's mm-hmm. a bit of a character. Is mm-hmm. that fair?
We try really hard to address that, to A to Z, really, in every possible way, including minimal. You know, because we believe in 100% that you can wear a white T-shirt or a white button-down shirt or a Breton shirt every day, or, you know, a simple everyday uniform, and have amazing style. It's not about the clothes.
It's about the confidence.
It's about the person in the clothes and the consciousness with which they wear it. And so when you ask, do we think everyone? I tend to be a bit of an idealist, but I do think that everybody has the potential to have good style. Part of it is a lack of consciousness. It's you don't realize how controlled you're being by the fact that you're shrinking back. I'm this age. I have hips. I am short. You know, you don't realize how much of that is controlling what you're doing and how you're, you know, how that's coming across in terms of your purchases.
Or I don't want people to look at me funny or think I'm weird.
Or I don't want to stand out, or I don't want to, or I need to have what everyone else is buying, even though that's not really right for me. So I'm more the kind of revolutionary, like, we got to change the whole world and get everyone to wake up and be happy about dressing, because it's, for me, it's such a joyful thing and so soulful and so important. Not shallow. I think that my feeling is, if people were, you know, could wake up to their true selves and listen to themselves and see how much the chatter of, you know, of what you're reading and what you're looking at is affecting your confidence, I think you could wake up and be that person. I feel everybody could be. You know, it's not at all a matter of how much money you spend or not spend or any of that. You know, I come from a time back to the 80s where you could wear a paper bag. You could be naked and you would turn heads and go, that person just has something. It's just even the way you tie a scarf or the way your hair is falling or tied, or, you know, it's very subtle. But it has totally to do with confidence. It has totally to do with who is
being
truly
in touch
you.
With who you are, yeah.
Who is truly
your
authentic
you self.
And what is the you that is buying in unconsciously to the larger culture and what the culture is telling you.
But it could also be the person who just doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you know, I'm getting up today and I'm putting on my jeans and I'm putting on my shirt and I don't wear any makeup and I'm going about
cool.
my business.
Yeah. But then that's style too, in its own way.
Yeah,
I
but
think.
Also not caring. Like, there's
it's a disinterest.
No, but there's plenty of people like that in the past. You know, that are like that. I mean, that really, they just wear khaki pants and a white button-down shirt,
cover
like
up
a Lauren
their, so they're
Hutton,
not naked.
But like a Lauren Hutton, the Lauren Huttons of the world. You know, it's like a dirty old hat. You know, a dirty old raincoat. It doesn't have to be something that you spend a lot of time with at all. Like, when you look back at the people that are, you know, had such an influence on designers, and, you know, at that time, see, that's another thing is, you know, it would be like a Lauren Hutton or a Georgia O'Keeffe, or, you know, I mean, they would just put a robe on. It's not consuming. It can be very simple. It's just that they have, you know, just a consciousness. They're not caring can have great style,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and it can be the best.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, we it's one of, you know, we really do try to show that on the site. If you look deeply into all the people that we've featured in it, and you dig back, you'll see that we do try to put that forward too. Like, to me, the hardest thing is to have great style in just a white shirt, and the most confidence. You know, I admire that
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Then you'd love my husband.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's it been like to work together, mother and daughter?
I mean, it's been a lot of things to work together. I mean, really, like, for on a macro level and, like, in the big picture, it's been pretty incredible if you look back. I mean, when we started Style Like You, like, I was extremely – I was still shy. I was a really shy child, and my mom was always such super talkative, so I always – that was always kind of like an insecurity of mine, like, oh, like, I don't have anything to say. And like, oh, am I going to – when we started to work together, I was really nervous that I was going to
– become invisible?
Yeah, be overshadowed. And I just didn't know if I wanted to be in that kind of relationship. I wanted to do my own thing and, like, be independent and, you know, because I was just starting college and just, like, kind of getting away for the first time when this all started. And I was nervous about that for sure. But it's pretty wild because, like, the – opposite thing has happened, and she really kind of you were a little nervous about that, but you sort of knew in your heart that if we were being super truthful with each other when we were working together, that that wouldn't happen.
And I'm very aware. Yeah. I was very aware of this, so I'm very conscious. You know, I've been very conscious of her being, you know, having her own space, and my not smothering that in any way.
Yeah.
But the absolute opposite has happened, and it's she is now she's my boss. She hands down rules the whole entire thing. She's taken my crazy, insane, you know, creative nut house. She has pulled it together and turned it totally into a business, and she's very extremely talented and at it. I couldn't even begin to do what she does. Not at all. We have completely opposite talents.
Describe
completely
them.
Same vision, opposite talents.
So what are yours?
She's extreme. My mom is extremely detail-oriented and, like, micro. So, okay. Like, everything is, like, perfection on the smallest level and one thing at a time. And I'm very, like, I see the whole picture. I'm about, like, organizing a vision, a strategy, and, like, putting that forth. I mean, I can get into the little stuff, but it's really, like, we're always battling that. I'm like, okay, let's think about how this is affecting, like, the whole year. And she's like, but today, but like right now, like we have to fix this.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what comes from being older.
Yeah.
Not older, just older than
oh,
you.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's that, but it's also just it's something that we might not have noticed had we not worked together, but we have completely complementary personalities and talents. The thing that we feel we have that no one else has, and that's something we completely share. It's absolutely synchronistic and is like seamlessly synchronistic is our love, the beauty that we see in people. What we do well is we love this open-hearted, soulful individual.
And the connection that you
and
have
the connect,
with him or
And the
her.
Connection that we make is the most creative thing. And I would rather... I have to have creativity and inspiration. I could forego everything for that. So this has been the most creative thing I've ever done for that reason. The connection to another human being and their creative, giving them the platform, giving them the voice, and making that connection with them has been by far the most creative thing I've ever done. And Lily feels the same way, and she's completely evolved as her own person from that as well. And that is the thing that together we're seamless and synchronistic. As far as the running, the detail, you know, all of the business. Things that the business side of it, how it all works, we're completely the opposite. So I think in a certain way, you know, we're just meant to do this, you know, and incredibly blessed with that situation. And in addition, I feel that what's happened, and this has been a recent understanding of mine, is that it's very Buddhist what's happened, which is within the structure, within the framework comes the growth, within limitations. So she has become much more of her own person. She has blossomed into way more of her own person within the confines of being around me every day than she would have, I feel, had she been on the other side of the planet. And I think that that's really, it's incredibly fascinating. You don't become less of yourself within the confines and the structure. You become more of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of blows my mind.
Mm-hmm. What a perfect way to end. Mm-hmm. On that note, and mm-hmm. so empowering and so inspiring. And
because we're mirrors and we learn.
You can teach her. She can teach you. John Donne once said, the child is the father of the man. And here's a perfect example mm-hmm. of that, too, how you can work well together. So people can go to your website, mm-hmm. styleikeyou.com. It really is a wonderful, wonderful, I was going to say travelogue, and I mean that, you know, to getting to know these people who you don't know. And it really is very inspiring. You two women are pretty damn classy.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining
for having
me
us.
Today.
Thank you.
Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.